listening to Nevada Backcountry on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. I'd like to thank Jim Irwin Shooting Performance Institute for sponsoring the show. Jim has posted his Hunter's Challenge dates. So go to shootingperformanceinstitute.com. Check out the dates for the Hunter's Challenge this year. Dave and I are going to try to make it out there, put our money where our mouth is, spend some time behind the gun, and see how we stack up in real-world hunting scenarios. Again, that's shootingperformanceinstitute.com. We got a bunch of housekeeping to get to, Dave. Man, the listener feedback lately has been absolutely great.
Yeah, at least we know we're not just talking to nobody and just it's open airwaves.
What am I, chopped liver over here? Yeah.
Well, I mean, you and I talking, but we do that with a fire and a bourbon out at camping.
That's a fact, yeah.
You know.
That's the way I describe the show. Oh, in fact, another quick, got off the phone with Chris Costin from the Muley Fanatic Foundation earlier.
Yeah.
Banquet date is set February 22nd. Chris will be our guest next week on the show.
Oh, excellent.
He's going to actually come in, and that's exactly what I told him. I said, man, it's so much better than over the phone. It's just hunters BSing around a fire pit.
Yeah.
But in a studio with microphones.
Exactly.
So
and
yeah.
No bourbon.
No bourbon. Nah.
You may have to fix that. Anyway.
On the company dime.
Yeah.
An email we got, we talked about it on one episode. It might have been a little confusing, but NBHA memberships. There are two different memberships this year, correct?
Yeah, we just opened up a new membership. The original one and the only one that was available was a National Field Archery Association and NBHA combined, since we're affiliated with NFAA. And that membership, it can get a little pricey, you know, with a family and everything. And the board had a long talk about this, and it was determined that there's a lot of shooters that don't compete in NFAA tournaments.
Strictly bow hunters.
Yeah, they're strictly bow hunters, or they are competition shooters, but they only compete in our Nevada circuit, you know, our Nevada 3D circuit or our Nevada paper and field round circuits. And they don't expand out and they don't do some of the larger NFAA ranking tournaments. So there's really no need for them to really have to have a NFAA membership. So we created the Nevada Bowhunter Association member-only membership.
Right.
So
very cool. Only
an NBHA membership. It's much less expensive, and it still allows you to support Nevada bow hunters, and not only just Nevada bow hunters, but it provides us and the support to help hunters with and support hunters in regulations, in front of the commission, whenever anything comes up. We don't only support only bow hunting stuff.
Right.
When things come up across the country, like, you know, we sent a letter to Idaho, sent a letter there for support on, they were trying to remove bow hunting and stuff as a inhumane hunting.
Oh, okay. Yeah, gotcha.
So we spread it out. So yeah, so there's two ways, and we would love people to just become members and help support us and our way of enjoying the outdoors.
100%. And like you said, I mean, yeah, okay, sending letters to out-of-state stuff that affects archers in other states, but I'd also point out some of the stuff that Nevada Bow Hunters Association has done on the ground here in Nevada.
Yeah.
Like the archery-only sheep tag that was passed.
Yeah.
Some of those earlier elk things.
Yeah, we were instrumental in getting the archery-only elk tags and antelope tags. We held back, or we kept the commissions from shortening up archery seasons and providing more time for other weapon classes. So we fought for that. You know, there's been a lot of things that we've had we've gone in front of the commission about, or even the wildlife CABs, the county advisory boards as well.
What's the NBHA-only membership run?
The NBHA-only membership runs $40 for an individual and $75 for a family, and that's, you know, mom and dad, and I think up to two or three children.
For people listening out there, think about all the money over the years you've wasted on the latest, greatest expanding broadhead that never actually opened inside. I mean, $75 for a family. Join an organization that directly impacts and supports your ability to get out and bow hunt in the state of Nevada. It's money well spent. I rest my case. That's all I'll say about it.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, and it still allows you to be a part of all of the, like, the 3D championship series.
Right.
You know, because you have to be a member. And that was a tough thing, you know, along with the NFAA and NBHA. So.
Right.
Anyway, yeah, check it out. It's all on the Nevada Bowhunter Association website.
Which is?
Which is NevadaBowhunters.org. And it is under memberships. You hit home, go down into memberships. And then check out the competition page, too. All the updated competitions are there for this 25 season.
I'll piggyback on that. Another bit of listener feedback from John actually thanked us, I guess you, for updating the calendar on the Nevada Bow Hunters Association.
Oh, you're welcome.
Website. But he also, he asked a question on there about the Bow Hunter Jamboree for this year. That is not going to take place in 2025.
Correct. Yeah. In 2025, we're not going to have the Jamboree out in Eureka. We have changed the format a bit, trying to get folks out to some of all of our clubs. So the 3D circuit has incorporated all of our state clubs, and we're hoping to bring back the Jamboree next year with a 3D marked yardage course, and then the next day being a 900 field course.
Okay.
So
what is a 900 field course?
So the 900 is what you see in, like, the Olympics when they're shooting at the big round target at, you know, 50 meters, 70 meters, and for kids down to like 30 meters and stuff. It's a stationary shooting, and you'll shoot. So let's say what, like, senior, like my division, like the.
you winced when you said that.
I know, right? Right. So we'll shoot a round, several rounds at 30 meters. At 50 meters, we shoot at three different ranges.
Okay, okay.
So right now, the situation is we don't have the round whitetail Olympic butts.
Right.
So we're in the process of trying to get enough money to purchase 22 of those things, because it's like $15,000.
Yeah, they're not cheap.
No, not sure. Especially the competition butts. Yeah.
So hopefully that answers your question, John. Stay tuned for 2026 for the Bowhunter Jamboree.
But John, get out there, man. That 3D series, it's online. Check it out. 13 shoots. It's going to be a blast.
And introduce yourself. If you run into Dave and I, hey, I'd love to shake your hand.
Yeah.
Next up, this is the listener feedback I love getting. It was just a random picture of a dead animal and a family gathered around it.
Yeah, that was cool.
I love those. So, hey, somebody, whoever you are, you didn't put your name, you didn't add any detail or context, but I loved opening up the thing and seeing a picture of a spike elk with a bunch of kids around it.
Yeah, so I thought that was so cool.
Congratulations to whoever that was. Coming up on the show, we got a lot to, well, I should say we bit off a lot to cover on the show. We're going to get into the upcoming Wildlife Commission meeting. There's a bunch of stuff there. The coyote killing contests are back in the news, so we've got to address that. And then last but not least, we got one more bit of listener feedback to get to. Unfortunately, looking at the time, we'll get to it after we come back from the break. But we got a really cool, detailed email from someone who has been doing necropsies on elk. They live in Eastern Oregon, and they've been using a couple different bullets. So I want to talk about that a little bit on the upcoming segment. Don't go anywhere. Stay tuned to 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Welcome back to Nevada Backcountry with David Catalano and myself, Henry Evans. Thank you to Legacy Sports International, home of the Howa Superlight, for sponsoring the show. I'm going to jump into this last bit of listener feedback we got here, Dave. I wanted to dedicate a little bit of time to this one. Jake from Eastern Oregon, and we were talking about it off air. I love the line he led into it with, which was, I'm in northeastern Oregon where the elk still outnumber the invading Californians.
I love that one. That was so cool. I got
Couldn't have said it better, Jake. Yeah.
No doubt, Jake.
So
kudos.
He's been listening on the podcast, which for listeners, if you want to go back and listen to past episodes, it's all up All you have to do is go to 991fmtalk.com, click on the podcast tab, or if you have Apple Podcasts, just search Nevada Backcountry, and we are on there as well. Diving into Jake's email, he says he's been stuck in ancient technology, 308 Winchester. Yeah, it's an older cartridge, but you shoot a 308.
Oh, yeah.
So does Randy Newberg.
Yeah.
It's a phenomenal cartridge, so I don't know if I'd call it ancient technology. But the real interesting part of his email, Dave, was he said, I've been performing necropsies on the elk I shoot. 2 years ago, I started loading a bullet from Barnes, a 150 grain TTSX at 2,900 feet per second. I hit a spike three times, including a scapula hit and a spine hit. All three hits resulted in good expansion and complete pass-throughs from the copper bullets. Getting into the Barnes TTSX is a monolithic bullet, and we've had a full rifle bullet episode before.
Yeah.
That is what you would expect from a solid copper bullet. And I made the point before on the show, those are a phenomenal elk bullet because they retain their mass. They open up to about two, three times the diameter of the original bullet, but they tend to punch through. So they'll kill stuff all day long, but they do tend to pass through. And what you wind up happening is those are the animals you're going to get that 50, 60 yard death sprint. If you're a fan of the upper shoulder shot, that if you break both of those upper shoulders, a monolithic bullet would be my first choice for taking a shot like that. But that will drop the animal right there. Absolutely nothing wrong with a high shoulder shot with a monolithic bullet. Now he continues, last year I used a loading from Hornady. It's a 165 grain SST going 2840. So he shot another spike, but only one round passed through. The other two dramatically shattered the scapulas, stopping in a few inches and wrecked about 10 pounds of shoulder meat. Both of these bullets were highly effective. They have very different terminal ballistic characteristics. Thought you guys might find it interesting. Keep up the good work, Jake. Jake, can't thank you enough for that. The Hornady SST, and I have some personal experience with this. I shot a Sika, Japanese deer, with a Hornady SST. I've shot hogs with them. I don't know if I might have shot a whitetail at one point with them, but the SST, and I gave you some of these for that 6.5
yeah.
Grendel.
Yeah.
It's a great coyote bullet, maybe a good deer bullet. It would not be my first choice for elk. It is he made the mention of ancient technology. The cup and core design of those bullets, it's well over 100 years old at this point, and it's basically a cup of copper or some sort of alloy, and then a core of lead. What happens when you hit an animal at a high velocity, close range, especially in magnum calibers, is that cup or jacket of the bullet tends to separate and the core, the lead, just disintegrates. So you do get that a lot where you'll have a big entrance or a big inside the body cavity expansion. You might not find the bullet afterwards because it's disintegrated. It's great for like a medium velocity, medium-ish sized game. Think coyote, antelope, deer. Works great for that stuff. The problem comes when you start to inch closer and closer to that front shoulder. If you hit any bone with an SST or a cup and core bullet in general, you're going to get that massive expansion and you're not going to get a ton of penetration. Like I said, especially in those high velocity magnum calibers, it would absolutely not be my first choice for something like elk. In fact, cup and core bullets is a whole reason why John Nosler in 1948 developed the partition, so that there is that kind of encapsulated rear lead portion of the bullet that then penetrates. So you get the rapid expansion up front, but you get some retained mass and you don't get full separation of the quote unquote cup or jacket from the core of the bullet. So again, Cup and Core stuff, a Hornady SST, a Remington Core Locked, the deadliest mushroom
in
the woods.
That's right.
Something like that, man. I'm thinking like, okay, 2,700-ish, maybe 2,800-ish feet per second, a medium caliber, a non-magnum caliber, and really nothing above like a deer-sized game. I would not reach for that with elk, because if you punch bone, you might wind up in a world of hurt and have a hard time recovering that animal.
Yeah.
I would go back to something like a Barnes TTSX. I think that's a great bullet for elk and up. But anyway, there's my 2 cents on that. We got enough time left in the segment, Dave. That covers listener feedback, a little bit of housekeeping. Let's jump into the upcoming commission meeting stuff.
Yeah.
Where do you want to start with it?
Real quick, my say on the all that bullet stuff.
Oh, yeah,
and,
yeah. Go on.
All the feet per second and this and that, because I'm pretty stupid when it comes to all of that. I listen to you and it's like, all right, I'll just hang out with Henry. He'll tell me what I need to do.
Yeah.
My suggestion is try archery.
Bingo.
A nice broadhead.
Yeah.
300 feet per second.
Fixed blade versus expandable, though, Dave.
Oh, I mean, fixed blade.
Yeah.
All day long.
I'm with you.
Fixed blade. They pass through all kinds of critters.
Oh, 100%.
There's that. Makes it easy.
There you go.
Don't have to read the back of a box.
Jake just switched to archery.
No, Jake.
I like guns just as much as the next guy.
Oh, yeah. No, it's fun.
Yeah.
It's a good time.
Those would be my recommendations, folks. Lower velocity, medium game, go for a cup and core. Bigger game, 7-rim mag, 300 Win Mag, go with like a monolithic bullet or at least a partition style. So now, on to the commission. Got a couple minutes.
Yeah, we got a couple minutes here. So there is a Wildlife Commission meeting coming up here on January 24th and the 25th. It'll be here in the Reno area at the Washoe County Administrative Complex Building in Building A, and that is located on 1001 East 9th Street.
Okay.
It will start at 8 o'clock in the morning on Friday, and then Sunday it starts at 8:30.
Well, can I segue real quick?
Fire away.
Okay, so, and we might end the segment on this, is that coyote contest thing, is that in the commission notes? I did not see it.
No, it's not. Technically, it's not in the commission, but it's Friday and Saturday. Friday,
okay.
January 24th, Saturday, January 25th. On Friday, towards the end of the commission for that day, they do discuss the contest committee, where they are discussing the department on issues related to wildlife contests in Nevada. So it's directly related to the coyotes, because there's nothing else that's out there that's a shooting contest.
To play devil's advocate, it seems like a conflict of interest to have something like this in a commission meeting when Endow awards buckles for the biggest animal killed. How is that not a contest?
Good way of looking at it. I don't know. I guess that would technically be a contest if you're providing an award for the largest
animal killed
animal
of that species.
Of that species. So, yeah. You know, one of the big kickers when it comes down to it is it's an unprotected species that you don't need a hunting license for at this time.
Yes.
So there was a discussion several days ago in relation to this where individuals brought forward recommendations for these killing contests, as they called them. And I know the county advisory boards advised bringing it forward to the commissions in relation to requiring a hunting license in order to
participate in the contest.
To participate in the contest, that you would have to have a hunting license. But I could almost guarantee you that most of the individuals that are participating in these contests
also hunt big game.
Yeah. They're also putting in for all these tags and chasing chucker and the whole nine yards. So that might be, not sure if that'd be a real valuable point. You know, you might have small handful of individuals that are like, oh, okay, yeah, I guess I'll buy a license.
Right.
You know, that kind of a thing. But
Or individuals with past game violations that aren't eligible for a hunting license.
Right, exactly. Or individuals that are coming, because some of these contests draw a great many folks.
Oh, absolutely,
From Utah, from Oregon, from Idaho, from all over. So those individuals would probably be have to make a decision of coming to Nevada for this weekend's contest.
Right.
And be required to purchase a non-resident hunting license, which, you know,
is spendy.
Can be spendy.
Unless it's a one-day thing, yeah. But
that one particular topic kind of relates to the coyote, to the contests, because it's talking about the
contest regulations
in Nevada.
Okay, well, coming up on the show, don't go anywhere. We'll get into the rest of the commission meeting in just a moment on Nevada Backcountry. Thanks for joining us again on Nevada Backcountry, proudly sponsored by Truck Envy of Reno. From running boards, camper shells, lift kits, you name it, Truck Envy has it. Go see Andy and the crew at Truck Envy in Reno. Now, over the break, Dave and I started riffing on this whole coyote killing contest thing. And if you've listened to the show long enough, I think you know where both Dave and I come down on it from a personal standpoint. But I wanted to point out real quick, something that gets my blood boiling is, one, as Dave talked about, it's an unprotected species. Two, it's an overpopulated species. And three, not enough people get out and actually kill coyotes. You know, they can be a nuisance species in the state. And the hypocrisy of these people that go after these sort of things is not lost on me. They're always the first to call when there's a coyote in the neighborhood and they want it removed, or their favorite Shih Tzu goes missing. They call somebody to come remove the coyote from the neighborhood. That coyote is killed. None of that money goes back into wildlife conservation. So it's kind of that thing where it's like, hey, look, they are a species that needs managing. Not enough hunters, myself included, actually get out and manage them. Hypocrites, keep your mouths shut and let hunters do what they do. Have a contest to kill coyotes. I guarantee, let's say over the course of one contest, 100 coyotes are killed. You could go out the next day to the same exact spot and kill just as many. That's how many of these things there are in the state. So that's Henry's gripe about that.
Boom.
I'm done.
Yep. Drop the mic, man.
Yeah.
So.
All right. So let's get on to the commission meeting.
So, so let's get on to the commission here. So Friday, January 24th, some of the big points that we've been kind of covering here or we'd like to bring up. So first off is going to be number 8 on the commission. The first thing that's really going to be discussed prior to that's just kind of like approving minutes and the standard dot the I's, cross the T's type of thing.
I'm holding up my sheet
you
and
are,
showing
it's all
Dave.
Highlighted. Dude.
Eight is the first thing I highlighted.
Exactly. Yeah. So this one has to do, it's a petition brought forth by several individuals.
I'll name them real quick.
Yeah, go for it.
Mr. Donald Mold, Mr. Christopher Smith, Miss Karen Taylor, Miss Catherine Smith, and Mr. Will Stolzenberg are the ones proposing this.
Yeah, so this particular petition is recommending changes to the trapping regulations to reduce the effects of incidental trapping of mountain lions, trapper education for new licensees, and improving collection of non-targeted trap data. Which the Department of Wildlife already requires trappers to provide a list of all animals that end up in their traps. So the data should already be coming in from trappers in relation to that topic there.
So how do you, and we've talked, we did a whole episode about this stuff, but I read that and I just go, how are you going to improve the data collection without infringing on people trapping and requiring some sort of monitoring via camera or whatnot? So I don't understand that whole part of the proposal.
Yeah, it's the petition. They provide some recommendations. They discuss things like a trap line has to be checked every 24 hours, which realistically that's just difficult.
You talk about
difficult.
If I'm a Reno guy and I got a trap line in the Santa Rosas.
Yeah, you can't drive out. I mean,
it's not happening.
Right. So it's some of these things are just very difficult to swallow or be able to implement.
Right.
You know, checking traps every 24 hours so that you can, if you happen to get a mountain lion in the trap, you can, I don't know, release it.
Yeah. And we talked about they want like certain spacing of traps. And
right, exactly.
Take all of the minutiae out of the equation. And where I come down on this whole thing is it's one more hurdle to a necessary conservation tool in the state of Nevada. I'm not a trapper. I don't have a fur bearer or whatever trapping license.
Right.
I don't personally do it. However, and part of that's just I live in Reno. So it's not something I do. However, I have friends that trap who are avid trappers. I know Ira Hansen, state senator, I believe.
Yeah, correct.
Yeah, Ira was the trapper of the year at one point. I think trapping is a necessary tool, and I think these people put these
It's like a heritage activity. I've been doing it from the beginning of time.
I mean,
you know, there's TV shows on folks in Alaska that are trapping. But the thing that I see as kind of an issue is some data that I would like to see moving forward with something like this is how many traps during the season are on the landscape.
Right.
And of those, how many actually trap mountain lions? To give yourself a gauge of like, what's the likely percentage of actually trapping a mountain lion in a trap?
Yeah.
And then take that information and compare it to how many vehicles are on the road and how many mountain lions get killed on the highway. I mean, if they're going to complain about trappers getting mountain lions in traps, what about incidental deaths in other instances?
Yeah. Here's what makes me nervous about this, Dave. It says for possible action.
Right. And a lot of these.
So is that going to be voted on?
Well, it can be. A lot of these petitions, I think this is the first, it might be the first, possibly second reading of this. An action being taken on this particular day, I don't see it really happening.
Okay.
The language from when I've read the proposal, to me, still needs some clarification. There's a lot.
Bingo.
There's a lot of things that are, they're recommendations. You know, like
right.
I can recommend you to do things around your house, but without providing how to do that. Like, if you're going to give me recommendations, give me solutions too.
Yeah.
Like, what are your solutions for these recommendations? What are your, how do you expect trappers to implement these in an effective way as well as an economic way to where they're not having to drive 600 miles every 2 days? So,
go back a step even, Dave. As far as I'm aware, and I've had a couple conversations with friends at Trap,
yeah.
Is this even a problem?
Well, that's it.
Or is this one of those pie in the sky utopian? We think, you know, I did a 2 day backpacking trip and I'm worried about that. Like,
yeah. And that's,
as far as I know, this ain't a problem in the state of Nevada.
Yeah. And I don't have enough information to really say anything in relation to that because I don't know if this has been really dove into by, you know, the predator management folks or anything like that.
If
but
it
yeah,
were a
I
huge
don't,
issue, you don't think these fools would be posting every week on pictures of a poor mountain lion in a trap?
Yeah, because that is one of the issues. You do see it on social media. And
I don't. That's what I'm saying, though. You think they would.
Right. And the thing is, it's like the same two or three pictures of a mountain lion caught in a trap. So
and it's from Wyoming or something?
Well, is it fueled by just a few instances?
Gotcha.
And those are things that I'd like to know the answers to. Is it, you know, what are the likelihoods? What is it? If it's like a 50% chance that mountain lions are going to be hit in every trap line, okay, you know, maybe something needs to be discussed. But if it's something that's happening like one out of every 100 trap lines. Okay. I mean,
doesn't seem like a major issue.
Doesn't seem like it should be that big of a priority.
Yeah.
To be honest. So, but again, that is number 8. And
okay.
So that one's probably going to be, have a lot of conversation during, as we just expressed a great deal of
10 minutes later.
10 minutes later. So then we have another one here.
Where are you at? What
number? Number 9.
Oh, you're at 9. Okay. I didn't understand that one. I didn't highlight it, but go ahead on 9.
Yeah. So I was kind of reading through that as well. And it says for possible action, it has to do with bills rather than specific language. I think it's more along the lines of reviewing bills or having the opportunity for those platforms.
They said here it is. It says something about develop platforms on bills by supporting or opposing general concepts contained within bills rather than specific language.
Yeah. So there's that one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, Dave.
They're just trying to clarify how to address some of these developing platforms.
On that one, let's take a quick break. And then when we come back, I have number 10 highlighted.
Yes, so do I.
I had some questions about that one. So we'll dive into that on the next segment of Nevada Backcountry. Keep those radios tuned to 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Final segment of Nevada Backcountry brought to you by Battleborn Tree Service, for hunters by hunters. They will care for your property like it is their own. Get in touch with Mike. He's a great guy. They'll come out. They'll make their recommendation. They'll make sure your trees stay as healthy as possible. And for you listeners out there, word to the wise, if you got fruit trees like I do, now is the time to start pruning them. I know it's been a light winter, but generally February is the time you want to start knocking those trees back. Get in touch with Mike and they'll take care of it. Now, diving right back in, like I said, last segment of the show, and we're only at number 10.
Yeah, but 10 on Friday.
Yeah,
we'll get through it.
Let's rip through this real quick. So explain number 10 to me. I highlighted it on here.
Yeah, so this is just an overview of possible changes to regulations concerning the permits, the land permits that non-resident guides have to acquire for hunting on like private lands and stuff and on certain lands.
You can be a non-resident and guide in the state of Nevada.
Yes.
That's why I highlighted it, because I didn't I always thought they structured it in such a way that like if you were a non-resident, you always had a resident guide kind of running your operation for you.
No, and this also has to do with like the master guides, because a lot of the master guides have multiple state licenses.
Gotcha.
But their base may be in Idaho, like where they live, but they guide in, you know, all the western states.
Gotcha.
We have several that have been on our show that were our master guides. And
yeah, but they're always local guys.
Well, yeah, but they also guide in Montana, Wyoming.
Right, that's a good point.
You know, all that kind of stuff. So it's that. And they're just going to go over the master guide agreements and propose expanding the requirements for submitting those land permits. It's just kind of going over that and making sure that all of those agreements and the changes are nice and tight and address potential issues that have come up over the last, you know, year or two or so.
Gotcha. Okay.
So, yeah. So
that's that one.
Yeah. And then 11 has to do with the contests.
Yeah.
So that's the commission. And these are all, it says for possible action, but they're so new. It's such a new topic
right.
that it's more so informative at this point in time. And then they'll make some recommendations for language changes and stuff. And then move it on to the next commission. But this one here is, you know, Dave McNich is going to discuss in their contest committee, decide to take action and provide direction on the department on the issue of the wild contest, wildlife contest in the state. So it'd be a really cool one to get online and listen to and see where in the process, you know, the general public is as well as the agencies are and the commission, what kind of get a feeling for what their thoughts are on it. So
well, and as we've talked about, we've got a trucker contest in the state. Nobody's griping about that, right?
Yeah,
the Battle Mountain Trucker Tournament.
Yeah.
Nobody's griping about that. This is, they always go after, you know, the thing could kind of vaguely resemble a dog or something.
Yeah.
It's a mammal, so people get weird about it and they want to go after it. But, I mean, come on, folks. We got trucker contests. We got buckle thing.
Well, people are passionate about things that are cute. You don't see anyone fighting for the Mormon crickets.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
When they're great point.
You know, or when they're spraying for, you know, millions of mosquitoes to be
right.
You know, they're nobody's not like, oh, they're so foul. Cute. Leave the mosquitoes alone. No. I mean, you
great
can't.
Great point.
Right. So they grab the cute stuff and fight for it.
All right. What next?
Then number 12, it's just going to be an overview of the predator management plan that the administrator, Shauna Spinoza, will be diving into.
Okay.
So that one's kind of cool. And then again, if you decide to provide public comment either online through typing dialogue, or you can get on and actually speak through the Zoom or Teams or whatever platform they're using.
Yeah.
Provide your comments on any of these issues. you only have 3 minutes. So make sure you don't rant and rave
Henry.
Like Henry and I do sometimes and completely.
Here,
go
I'll
off
submit
the rails.
My comment now. Miss Karen Talo, you suck. No. All right.
All right. So then there's a break. Then Saturday, the 25th, the first portion of the morning, again, is all of your regulations to just have to cross T's, dot I's, that kind of wonderful stuff.
Yeah.
And then they're going to dive right into. I just lost a page here. Yep.
Did you make it to 20 yet?
No, I'm working on it. Just finished. We're just starting on 14, 15, 16, 17, cruising along here.
Okay, then I had 19
on. Yeah, so we're
going
to go straight to 19 because all the stuff prior to that is just, you know, like the wildlife cab, all the wildlife cabs will provide what was said in their summary of their meetings over the last month. And all the announcements and just, it's like housekeeping, like what we do, our housekeeping. So then they get into 19. This says for possible action, but this is a workshop in relation to going in front of the commission to provide the junior hunters with bonus points.
Right. And this is why I had it on my thing. I didn't understand it says it would simplify the issuance, use, and administrative management of bonus points associated with junior hunt applications. So we've talked on the show before about my eldest daughter, Madeline.
Right.
Do they manage junior bonus points separately? Why are they addressing just junior? I thought a bonus point was a bonus point was a bonus point. Didn't matter if you were 12 or 102.
So that was one thing I was trying to look into, and I didn't quite get the information that I wanted to be completely confident in saying too much here. I don't know does your daughter get bonus points as a junior?
Well,
like next year, will she have two bonus points for a junior?
This year, so she turns 12,
right?
But not until October. So my understanding is she's eligible to purchase just bonus points.
Okay.
Right.
But are you putting her in for only junior hunts, or are you putting her in for regular season hunts like you? Because you can do that.
Oh, yeah, I am, because I'm going to start her building up her sheep points.
Okay, so because sheep are not a junior hunt. Only thing that a junior hunt is deer.
Oh, great point. Okay.
This has to do with only
just the junior
deer,
hunts.
The junior hunts. That's it. Gaining bonus points for the junior hunts. Now, the thing I was looking for, because this is NAC 502. So I was curious and I couldn't find it, and I need to talk to somebody about it, but is this in relation to as they junior out, you know, now they're, whatever it is, 16 years old.
That would make
sense,
Do
they lose their points because they were...
Or does it roll into...
Right, exactly. Yeah, and that's my thought is like, do these terminate, like these 3 years that they were juniors, since they were junior hunts they applied for, are they dead in the water and they just disappear and the kids start over as now they're adults and have to put in for... The regular hunts.
Okay.
And are they gaining different points for the regular hunt? Or do those points as juniors, if they never got a junior tag, which I know several kids that never have gotten a junior hunt tag for deer.
Really?
Yeah,
okay.
I know a few. Do those now roll into them being technically adult hunters? And does it roll into their deer bonus points as adult hunters?
As a parent, I would say absolutely.
I would hope so.
Just species specific.
Yeah, you're still paying the same amount for the tag. You're still buying the license. You're still doing everything that's required to hunt in the state of Nevada. So why shouldn't those points just roll straight over into the general mule deer?
Okay.
Yeah, so I'm definitely going to be there listening to number 19, even though my kids are
grown,
in their 20s and out. But, you know, I've got, you know, you've got little ones, I've got kids that I train for archery that are young, and I want to see the youth have that opportunity, because as it's becoming so hard for these kids to actually draw a tag, when my kids first started is when this whole program kind of started going off.
It's practically over the counter.
Well, it was guaranteed. It was guaranteed the junior kids got tags. So my kids got tags for the first 4 years of hunting, which really engages them in hunting and really engages them in the whole process of the hunt, the camping, the hiking, the processing of the animal, the whole thing really gets them going. And they were they were just jazzed when hunting season came around. They were like, where are we going? What are we looking for? Are we going to go up this canyon again? And so and it really kind of irritates me that these young kids coming up now are feeling
like... You said
like,
you know a couple that, well, yeah, haven't
that
drawn.
Haven't. I mean, they're 15, 16 years old this year, and they have not pulled a junior tag.
Unreal.
And it's just, it's like, it's almost heartbreaking because some of them are like, you know, these kids get into high school and other activities, and then they're in college and lots of activities, you know.
If that fire doesn't get lit early, it doesn't stay burning.
Right. Yeah. It disappears. And that's what, I mean, we're trying to recruit future hunters, future outdoors men and women. To me, this is just, a bad way of going. So anyway, number 19 is going to be pretty big.
Okay.
So, and then number 20 is primarily, it's regulation 25-01 all the way through to 25-10. And these are all just going through the application deadlines, the draw results for 26 turkey, game tag application eligibility, and tag limits for 2025.
Goes through all the dream tags, the heritage tags,
partnership and wildlife tags, the quotas, as well as the season dates. And they'll be going through the 2025, 26, as well as the 26 and 27, which will be all of the season dates. Yeah. So if you're really interested or have any issues with the previous year's hunting dates, you know, maybe too much overlap or certain...
Bring back the bugle hunt.
Oh, man, wouldn't that be awesome? Rotate it like they used to.
Yeah.
Rotate the bugle hunt. So they're going to be going through, and once that's locked in, you're not changing that. This goes all the way through 2027 season. And then that's it. Then after
that is public
comment, future commission stuff, you know, hit the gavel and go home.
Well, we're about to do that. I don't have a gavel to end the show, which kind of sucks.
We should have a gavel.
I'll just bring in a mallet.
You know what? A shotgun. Just shoot the shotgun off. Shotgun start.
Thank you guys for staying tuned through our rants. Go support the show sponsors. They may not endorse or support some of my content, but they're good enough to at least support the show. Have a great Sunday. Dave and I will be back next week. Next up is Tom Gresham with Gun Talk.